all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Zach Koga. Zach is the co-founder of Carbon 4 Brewing, where he operates a business on a daily basis. His education is in engineering, and he worked at Findorf after college until the point at which he founded the brewery with his brother and best friend. His last complete construction project before making the jump over to Carbon 4 was the Modern, a high-rise building across the street from the Bucks Arena in Milwaukee. Zach, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
So I am curious, how does someone go from construction to owning a brewery?
I suppose sort of tangentially, I never really planned on owning a brewery, you know, at the outset of my life and as I went through college, but, you know, I really think it was just sort of an opportunistic thing. I mean, I don't want to say that in kind of a bad way, but basically my older brother, Ryan, was a brewmaster, a head brewer out in Montana. And as the years went on there, you know, the family was always talking about how do we get Ryan his own brewery, you know, and be able to kind of break through the glass ceiling, because he was at a smaller business and he was really able to do more than he was doing. And we wanted him to make a kind of a better life for himself and spread his wings. So that was going on while I was kind of aggressively, you know, attacking my construction career. The construction thing was what I trained for in college. I was good at it. You know, I liked it. But I always had kind of this itch that I knew I was going to do something different or something more. And that's like, the connection with my best friend, Alex. I mentioned it's my brother and my best friend, Alex, that we did it together. Alex and I just kind of always had this sort of understanding that we were going to do something more. We didn't really know what it was. We just kind of entrepreneurial, you know, I think both sort of natural leaders, just, you know, with our growing up with friends and stuff. And we were co-presidents of the entrepreneurship class in high school. So the three of us sort of came together with Ryan having this talent and really a need to kind of get out on his own and be able to sort of fulfill his destiny. And Alex and I were always sort of scheming business plans and trying to figure out what the next move would be. So I had a bit of a quarter life crisis that I think helped accelerate the jump over. But I was building, you know, I was working for Findorf and working on that Modern project in Milwaukee. And it was this great project. I was probably the youngest guy ever to lead a high rise building in a major urban market, you know, in the US. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, wait, is this it? You know, is this kind of it? I mean, it's a cool thing and it's really good work, but you know, I knew I needed to do something a little bit more. So we put together the brewery, while I kept my day job. And then by the time we got the brewery open, I kept my day job for about another year and a half. And, when my first child was born, my daughter Sloan, I knew instantly I had to quit the day job and focus on the brewery, and that, you know, the risk of leaving my day job was so much less than missing any more time with Sloan or kind of just being like untrue to myself. You know, I feel like I really, really owed it to her. Like immediately it became clear to me when she was born that I really owed it to her to be honest with myself and to break out and make sure this brewery would succeed.
Wow, that's a great story. That's inspirational, too, and empowering for so many people. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. So the beer market, I imagine, you are entrepreneurial, but you probably didn't have a lot of background in that initially. What is the beer market like right now? And what's your approach and strategy with Carbon 4?
The beer market's pretty wild right now. We've kind of said lately that I don't know if we would start Carbon 4 again today. There is more room for craft. There's a lot more things that are going on. There's so much more good work to do. There's stuff that we're, growing and chasing. So it's not that there's not opportunity there, but it is a very different opportunity now than it was in 2012. It is something that we, anticipated. I mean, luckily we were right. So now we can sound really smart. But when we first started, we just said, when you look at the world, everything is cyclical. I mean, what's old is new again. That's just time and time and time again, history repeats itself. And we were like, the craft brew is making a run. We probably have 5 to 10 at the most years to really establish ourselves before there would be, a new correction. And really we were kind of thinking more like in that five-year range. And so our whole big plan was to make sure that we grew organically, that we really built out from the base, that we had a very strong home market presence, and that we focused entirely on Wisconsin, kind of starting in Madison and moving to Milwaukee and up to the Fox Valley and so on. And we wanted to make sure that that foundation was very strong so that if and when the market started to saturate and kind of reset and maybe, filter out some players, that we would have this really nice sort of organic foundation underneath us and just sort of grow through it. So it's not fun to be right about that because it's still really hard, to work through saturation and to stay strong amongst all our peers. It's more and more difficult every day to get people's attention, to even if they like your beer, they move on to the next thing because there's just so many things to try.
Yeah.
So we're in the trenches, fighting that fight every day, but it's going great. We grew again last year. We have plans to probably grow maybe around 20% again this year by volume, and we're getting ourselves into some new experiments to help some future growth. And, financially we're in a good place. We're not overextended on equipment facilities like a lot of people are. So I feel like we're really in a good place, and that's not the case for a lot of people, both in Wisconsin and regionally. A lot of breweries are overbuilt. A lot of national and super regional breweries are overbuilt and kind of pulled back their markets to focus on stronger markets at home. And again, that's tough. I don't want to see a market ever struggle, but at least we anticipated that, and that we kind of put ourselves in position to be, I really expect to thrive through it while the market sort of figures itself out.
Yeah. It sounds like you really mapped out a strong strategy to open with, and that's helped you. I love the focus on the organic growth and the, really defining your home base and kind of creating some customer loyalty there. Nice job. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm sure all of our listeners are dying to hear, what's your favorite beer?
I'm not a very good fan of anything, like except for the Packers. I'm just absolutely crazy. But I'm like one of these people that doesn't have what's your favorite color? I'm like, I don't know, but of the beers we make, Tokyo Sauna, I would probably say is my favorite, but at the same time, I really enjoy a lot of what we make. I like kind of bouncing around the different styles and things that we do. Tokyo Sauna is the one that I'm usually most excited about when it comes back. And that beer is our this year it'll be our March seasonal. So it's coming back here. We're brewing it this week. So about two to three weeks, it'll be in the market in Milwaukee and Madison and all around the state. But my first favorite craft beer was Bell's Two Hearted Ale, and that's because it was on tap at the Memorial Union on Lake Mendota here on campus. And it was like the first kind of IPA, well, I guess it's an APA, isn't it? Yeah, that I really just kind of fell in love with. You know, it was really early craft beer drinking for me.
Yep.
I mean, I was never this guy that just chugged beer all the time, and none of us are. It's kind of this joke with us as the owners that there's a lot of our customers and employees that are like better beer nerds than we are, because we really appreciate it. And we look at the whole thing is really interesting to us. It's not just drinking the beer, like the whole thing, that it's a manufacturing business and there's a supply chain, and trying to kind of master and navigate the distribution networks and, you know, reverse engineer beer that we just want to exist in the world, but also that we know will maybe perform or that people will like. And trying to understand the consumer is just, it's a fun problem. You know, it's really just like a forever ongoing problem. So, I guess Tokyo Sauna of our beer, love Bell's Too Hard Ale. I love Surly Furious. That's a Minnesota beer that I stumbled on in Rochester. My wife's from Rochester and my father-in-law is big into craft beer. And, you know, he's always giving me Minnesota beers when I go over there. And that was one that he kind of pushed my way early on in their story. And I really liked it. And I still do. There's a whole bunch of them though. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, and you're right with speaking to the earlier point of, there's always something new coming out and there's always something new to try. So it is hard to kind of say what is your favorite when there's lots of flavors out there. But your Tokyo Sauna, I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for that because I have not tried it yet.
Yeah, there's a big like sumo wrestler with a panda bear head on him on the package. So it's pretty hard to miss. Okay. It's like bright yellow.
Yes, your pack. Your branding and packaging is fantastic, which nice job.
It's all about, a lot of people ask, oh, what is carbon for me? And then who are you guys and all that? And really there's just this underlying idea of, I try to make this more concise. Sometimes I get a little long winded in my thought here, but it's this playoff of principled but not traditional, and it's sort of this permission to be awake, you know, to be alive today, to open up your head a little bit, but at the same time we're still very fundamentally sound people. I mean, like, we're very intentional in our strategy with the business, we're very conservative fiscally, but with the branding and the thing that we're trying to share with people, the value that we're trying to add is like, don't take yourself too seriously, you know, like, just get over it, get over yourself, have fun, like, expand your mind a little. That package might not make sense. It's okay to think about it and say, what the hell? We try to do that.
I love it.
And we have an artist, I should give him props, Jason Heiser. It's H-E-U-S-E-R, Jason Heiser. He's, I think his handle on Etsy and some other things is Sharp Writer. He's this really talented artist that had worked for years and years in the gaming industry in Silicon Valley. And he's got a personal portfolio online and he gets a lot of following in sort of the like subculture of the internet and Reddit, you know, feeds and things. And we stumbled on him and cyberstalked him until he agreed to work with us. But it turns out we just really love working together. We give him carte blanche, you know, pretty much to develop the branding assets. And we sort of just give some inspiration and let him, you know, let him create what he's going to create. We really believe in let talent be talented, whether it's our employees or somebody else. And so he's fun to work with because he really comes up with some crazy stuff. And, you know, we try to feed that inspiration with our own sort of weird naming and all the odd branding sort of fits together in its own way in our heads. But I know it can look pretty disparate from the outside.
No, it's fantastic. And I love it. It captures attention, which is obviously the goal and the purpose, right?
Yeah, that's really the point.
Well, let's talk about networking a little bit here. Yeah. So to a lot of people, networking is a really scary word that invokes fear and hesitation and uncertainty. My goal is to remove that fear as I ask you this question. If you can share with me your most successful or favorite networking story that you have.
I have to kind of preface maybe like the next like segment here that I wouldn't say I'm a particularly strong traditional networker. You know, I've always struggled at doing like the sort of meetup thing, even though I was on the board for Madison Magnet and Madison here, you know, Young Professionals Network. So my story would be probably impressing a guy named Don Hawkins. He goes by Hawk. He was sort of the grandfather of baseball in Appleton, where I'm from, Appleton, Wisconsin. He I don't know the full history, but he feels like the founder of like the Post 38 Legion Baseball Club there, which is the summer high school baseball program for part of Appleton. And he also invented Magic Mix, had a business making baseball fields and was a professional scout. And he just kind of Mr. Baseball. And I think just, you know, developing a relationship with this surly, you know, guy Hawk, you know, running around the baseball field trying to take care of us instead of just ignoring him as this old guy, you know, really valuing him as a person, what he does for us, you know, in high school and baseball, and trying to treat him with some respect and really just trying to like impress him and get his, you know, kind of seek his love and appreciation. That's probably the best thing I ever did for a relationship, because to me the networking is really just relationships. Like, we're a communal species, you know, are you making productive relationships or not? And we try to like engineer that process with meetups and things. But I think I go back to gaining some trust and belief from Hawk, because ultimately he, you know, took a liking to me and thought that I had, you know, what it took, and basically called the University of Iowa baseball coach and said, you're giving this kid a scholarship, like he's the real deal. And that coach essentially said yes, because Hawk was that kind of guy. Like, he doesn't do those things lightly. And that coach came to watch me play. I didn't even know that Hawk was setting this up. And then I got a phone call, you know, after the game that the Iowa coach came to watch me, saying, you know, I like what I saw and like, let's talk. And while my dream to be a professional baseball player didn't pan out, and even the Iowa thing didn't pan out all the way in the end, there was a coaching change and I ended up transferring back to Madison. But, that whole series of events, you know, really trying to up my game and life in general, the faith that Hawk had in me, and then just the incredible sort of work ethic and experience I learned at Iowa, you know, being trying to like make my own way as a D1 athlete, that totally set my life up to be where it is today. I mean, I don't think I would have the same sort of resolve, and I wouldn't have had the same sort of work ethic and drive at Madison and in my early career with Findorf, and all those things led to, I think, my ability to jump into Carbon 4 and whatever the next thing is. So Hawk's definitely one of the most important people in my life.
That is an amazing story. I love that you opened with networking is just a relationship, and there's so much truth to that. But it was more than a relationship. It was more of a mentorship that you found in him. But he said—
Yeah, well, and it was like a grandpa that was like, it was like a guardian angel, you know, because he never, never like overdid it. You know, he didn't like totally let me know that he thought I was like a good ball player. And he was just around all the time, and he was quiet. You know, he's that type of guy, quietly taking care of things. And I mean, I had no idea that this coach was watching me play a game. And I remember I hit a home run in that game, and I was a catcher and I threw out a guy that was stealing, and I didn't even know, you know, and Hawk's just grinning ear to ear in the stands, because he knows this coach, Scott Programmer, is watching me. And so he's kind of this guardian angel, like grandpa figure in my life.
That's so cool. Thank you so much for sharing that. So I imagine that you have a fairly extensive network. I would assume, based on, you know, being one of the owners of Carbon 4, you do have some media exposure, obviously. What do you do to stay in front of or nurture your network?
I, you know, you're right, just because being a business owner and of a very social company, I think I have a network, but it's like to no credit to me. because you're just in contact with so many people all around the state. You know, every business owners kind of just glom together, because they, you know, it's really hard to, I think you probably understand this in your business. It's very hard for anyone in the business that's not an owner to understand what it really is like to be the owner. And so I think I've naturally aligned, you know, with other business owners. Like, you just sort of get it. Like, you know, you have payroll and issues and HR and insurance. Like, it's all these unspoken things that, you know, really bonds us. So there's that. And I think I have to remind myself to just kind of be open and reach out to friends, you know, knowing that they're as busy as I am. And it's always really nice when you hear from your brothers and sisters in arms. And then, you know, getting out in front of beer dinners, or like last night we had an event where we let a bar have like an exclusive first crack at a keg. So we go down there to hang out and talk to people and have a couple of beers. So it's a very social line of work. But, you know, I think it's just at the end of the day, reminding yourself that we really are, we're a communal species by sort of definition, by development. And, you know, whether or not you're willing to admit it, you require other people to live a good life. I mean, you really, you just by DNA, by design, you have to be, you know, around somebody. There has to be at least one person, you know, that you're connected with, I think, to find any amount of happiness in life. And that's coming. I'm kind of a lone wolf. Like I'm very independent. I had a superintendent at Findorff one time say to me, just kind of stopped and stared at me. And he's like, "You're not much of a pack dog, are you, Zach?" And I just started laughing. That's about the most accurate thing, you know, anybody's ever said. But it doesn't mean you can be a hermit. And so I wish I had something more profound to say about it, but you just got to try. I mean, just keep swinging, just keep jabbing, take baby steps, just move forward. I mean, even smiling at somebody in the store is a step forward and keeping yourself open.
What advice would you offer to the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
I look at it less, look at the network maybe less transactionally, less as like this task, I think, in this big to-do checkoff sort of thing. I think I mentioned earlier that, you know, networking is really just making friends, which is really just sort of living as a human being. And I think the more we try to industrialize networking, the more we can get away from that. Now, I mean, I realize LinkedIn and meetups and things really can scale up, you know, getting people together. So those are good things. They're not inherently bad, but I think the best way to grow your network is really look at just sort of like a very fundamental thing in life, maybe, is to look at how can I add value, you know, to the world in general? How can I, you know, look for opportunities where you can just legitimately provide value to somebody? You know, I think that's a friendship, that's a relationship, that's something that sort of leads to the result or the symptom of having a good network, a strong network. Because it's really not about knowing everybody under the sun. It's about having actual relationships with people, you know, having actionable people in your network that would really respond if you have a need, or, you know, if you just feel like you can add value to the world. Because I think, I don't know, you know, you get kind of forced into these networking situations, which again can be a good thing, but you know, you go there and everybody's trying to sell you insurance. And it's it can be kind of nauseating, you know. It's like, man, I don't want to go listen to how many ways I can buy life insurance, you know, or whatever, start some IRA. So I think the advice I could give to a young person getting started is really just look at the world as a place to, what can I give to it? And even when you're in those sort of forced situations, just try to keep that lens on. Don't get cynical. I get cynical too quickly, and there's still really great people in there, you know, and realize that the person trying to sell you insurance, you know, that they're just trying to do their job and you know, have some empathy for them, realize that they're nervous too, and that, you know, that people default to work because it's easy, you know, it's easy to talk about. So maybe instead of being turned off by the sales pitch, maybe you could be challenged, you know, by, okay, how can I cut through the crap here and meet this person more authentically? How can I get them to stop talking about their work and maybe more about themselves? And that takes some preparation, you know, thinking about just leading questions, you know, in general, when you're going to meet new people, and trying to get your head ready to be authentically interested in other people and strangers.
Yeah, there's lots of good components you shared there. Like, you know, have the empathy for the individual. And yes, we've all met a ton of insurance sales reps, but at the same time, let's try to take the opportunity and get to know them on a personal level. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And sorry for picking on.
Yeah, we all know plenty of them.
I'm sure they get jokes like that. Yeah, I have friends in the industry, and I'm sure they get hammered with being the butt of the joke all too often. But, you know, they get the last laugh because they're making more money than all
exactly.
of us.
Exactly. Okay, so you covered digital networking a little bit, speaking about LinkedIn, and obviously traditional networking. You're hosting events, you're attending events. Which one do you find more value in?
You know, I think traditional networking, in my own life, just because, like, the theme of what I'm saying of I don't really think about networking as networking. You know, I'm just trying to look for people I like and want to associate myself with in general, and people who I, you know, where I feel like I can, you know, be part of the equation and add value and learn from them. So I think that works out better traditionally, which to me is just like in person, like however you would meet. And really I'm looking, when I look at traditional networking, I'm really looking more for like the, like I want to hang out, you know, at whatever, at the backyard barbecue or go do something fun together. I think about that more than like the happy hour, you know, the business happy hour. But really there's not, at the same time, there's really not much of a distinction, because kind of like as those real relationships ebb and flow between just the digital format and meeting those people in person, like I try not to draw a hard line between them. If you have a connection, you have a connection, you know, if you can add value to each other, you can add value to each other. So I don't think I draw too hard of a line between them. I tend to be more successful, I think, meeting people in person. You know, in this, the digital networking, traditional networking, it's kind of the same as how I think the word social media are overused. You know, it's, I mean, what is social media? What a total misnomer. And I think it really undersells, you know, what social media actually means. I mean, if it means Facebook and the social components of like the Google platform and LinkedIn, and I mean, these things are just totally dominating our world and our attention. I think it's sort of a buzzword that really undersells how ubiquitous and huge, you know, social media really is. In this digital marketing, traditional marketing, digital networking, traditional networking, I think drawing too much of a line between them kind of undersells this fundamental act of just meeting people in our lives.
I definitely can agree with that, you know, in person, face to face conversation is just more real, but also the, you know, okay, you spoke digital marketing, digital networking. I mean, I think marketing and networking are very similar in a lot of ways, because it's all about building relationships, right? When you're marketing, you're trying to get someone interested in you or your brand, which is building a relationship with you or that brand. As far as social media goes, social is the critical word there. And social is a relationship activity. It's having a conversation. So it's just some interesting points that you pulled out there. And I very much appreciate them.
Yeah, I think there's a guy, Gary Vaynerchuk, is this crazy guy. Started VaynerMedia. I don't know if you've heard of him. He has podcast.
I follow him very closely.
Like YouTube. he's awesome. I love his energy. And I like what he says about social media, where he's like, this is just the current state of the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, stop saying social media. Like, it's the current state of our lives, period. End of story. Like, it's not some subcategory. It's where all of our attention is. And it, you know, I like how he kind of cuts through that and just follows attention. It's a very sort of fundamental, you know, view on the world. And I like that a lot. I think that way a lot, where I like to try to pare things down to the basics. And yeah, I really gel with him on that whole idea where it's, you know, I think when people say social media, it's for like middle age and baby boomer executives to be able to call it something. And everyone else in the world knows it's like, it's the world in its current form. So like, we need to pay attention to these things, not give them cute names. but I get it. I mean, I know why it's there. It started as something and you need to be able to reference it. But I think often nomenclature has too big of an impact on reality, you know, and on how decision makers kind of, I don't know, manage, discuss, execute sort of like act real reality.
Yeah. They're letting kind of the buzzwords.
Yeah. Like, it's like, as long as they call it social media, they're just going to think that it's something their niece does. And it's like, no, it's something you need to do very seriously and you need to do it. Don't outsource it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Well, I would argue the outro.
It doesn't mean that there's not.
Because that's what we do.
You know, I think that really the better place for third party help is help. I think that if a company's really going to be successful,
yes,
marketing anything today, they need to get serious about it in house. I mean, they need to be able to really work on production value and storytelling in-house, because you just cannot connect a third party tight enough to do it right. You need third party help still. You know, you definitely need help. You need help getting started. You need help looking at it. So there's still a lot of room for all the third party providers to work on in marketing. But you know, companies need to get more serious about it.
I mean, it's building the strategy and kind of auditing what else is happening out there, so that when you, as your brand, are producing content, you're posting stuff that is going to connect directly with your target audience. That's what's important. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
You know, I've thought about this a little bit in recent years, where something I'm kind of grappling with personally is that I think my 20-year-old self would kick my ass. I don't know if I have a lot of advice for my 20-year-old self, and maybe more specifically like my 22 or 21-year-old self, more than 20-year-old, but I was a very driven young guy. I really didn't waste much time in my 20s. I have very little regrets about college. You know, my college experience started at the University of Iowa. I don't remember if I talked about this earlier. Sorry. But I got a baseball scholarship to Iowa. I just worked my face off. I mean, any D1, any college athlete knows the story there, particularly like, and at the D1 level, it's your entire life, 7 days a week. And that really whipped me into shape. Kind of, you know, I think awoke sort of an animal inside of me. I always had a lot of energy and intensity and stuff, but it really kind of organized my work ethic and helped to bring about this sort of, I don't know, resolve in me, you know, that I think I really learned from like my parents. My mom in particular just has incredible resolve. And I think that experience started for me when I transferred to Madison and kind of gave up on the baseball dream. I really had to, that was a really tough decision for me, a big fork in the road to say, hey, you're making a decision here as a 19-year-old to totally change your dream. Of trying to be this pro baseball player and do something different. You got to be serious about this if you're going to hang that up. Because I had other offers to go D1 and to other colleges around the country. I spent that whole summer being recruited. And so it was a really big decision for me to change and not play, you know, the formal varsity sport. And so in doing that, I I was pretty laser beam focused when I got to Madison. I mean, I still knew how to have a really good time. I've partied more, you know, I've done my fair share of partying and stupid things. But I guess I've lived to tell about it. But I really, in between, just worked like crazy. I was always, I don't know, in different clubs and being a leadership, you know, member in like the construction club, doing the real estate club, taking extra, you know, business courses parallel to my engineering degree. The engineering program I was in was pretty challenging. I had three internships. I took those very seriously. As a senior, I worked full time, you know, at one of my internships while finishing. So, and I worked out like crazy, and I ate way more healthy in college than I do now. So I don't know. I would tell myself, like, you're only 20, like, enjoy it a little bit. Cause you don't realize how easy you have it. I think I thought I was doing more than I really was. And I was overestimating how busy I was. Cause really you get into the real world and works all year round, and you have a family and all these other things start happening. Like, I think I definitely was taking myself more seriously than I should have at 20, but I also really find myself wanting to get back to the roots of my 20s. Cause I felt like a force, you know. I felt pretty unstoppable, and my willpower was pretty unshakable, you know, when it came to eating more healthy and getting myself prepared with, you know, meals ahead of time.
There's
and
all still that. Time but, to get back to that, I would say.
Yeah, I try. It's hard with all these kids around and this candy and stuff. You know, holidays come around with kids and there's just too much candy in the pantry.
Oh, yeah, it never ends, right? We've got Valentine's Day, and then you've got your St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, man. And God forbid you throw it away. My wife just, not my wife, my daughter has the memory of an elephant. I mean, she just, I throw away one piece of candy and she's like, you know, 3 weeks later, where's that piece of candy? I'm like, come on. You know, how do you remember that? And she gets so upset at me.
Okay, so we've all heard of the 3 degrees of separation. Who would be the one person you'd love to connect with? And do you think you could do it within the 6th degree? Did I say that right? 6 degrees of separation.
I hope this isn't like too cliche. I think it'd be really fun to connect with Elon Musk. I mean, I thought that before, you know, the recent Falcon Super Heavy launch, you know, where he's really in the spotlight right now. I thought he's just a really fascinating guy for a long time. I kind of specifically have news about him filtered out in like my news app, you know, I have for years now. You know, he's one of these all-time entrepreneurs that just refuses to accept the status quo. While I'm not nearly as successful or smart or anything as him, I feel very, when he does stuff, I'm like, yes, you know. And I know I'm not the only one. That's not a unique thing, but as an engineer, as kind of a nerd and an entrepreneur, I just, you know, I really, look up to him, admire stuff that he does. And I do actually have a connection to him. One of my good friends growing up is buddies with him and invested in SpaceX. And so I actually have a relatively close connection to him, but I still don't think I'll ever. I don't expect to be friends. I don't expect to, like, maybe
Why
I'll
not?
Meet him someday. Because the friend of mine is somebody that moved away when we were kids. We were really close. And when he moved away, I was super bummed out. And while we kind of loosely stay in touch, you know, I don't talk to him regularly. His mom still lives in Milwaukee. Occasionally we'll kind of hear that he's back in town and try to catch up with him, but he's kind of a celebrity in his own right. But he's been getting into like the investor scene out in California. So he's mixing it up with like Ashton Kutcher, who's a really involved investor, with Elon Musk, with, He went to Harvard with Mark Zuckerberg, and he actually turned down Facebook, you know, when it was in the dorm. He turned down Twitter, you know, as like an early investment involvement. Ended up being a pretty pivotal guy in Spotify. And now he started his own venture fund with some like other billionaire guy. So he's got his hands full. I really admire him too. He He's a really smart guy, but I think Elon Musk would be a fun one to meet.
Well, I think you should consider taking advantage of the relationship that you have a little bit. And
Yeah, but
one day. No rush.
Speaking
one day.
Of networking and really being friends, yep. You know, I really owe it to my buddy to talk to him a lot more because I've wanted to. We haven't talked a whole lot recently.
Sometimes a little text message that says, "How's it going?" goes a long way, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a fun little story. You never know who knows who, right? And that's what the beauty of networking is.
Yeah, it's not just Kevin Bacon, right? That's 7 degrees.
Yep. All right. So obviously you're a very intelligent professional, and I imagine you read a lot of books. What book are you reading right now?
I'll admit that I take in a lot of information, but reading books was a struggle for me most of my life. Like I got through college. I mean, by the end of college, I might have read 3 or 4 books in total, you know, in my life, but I just had a different way of kind of taking in information. I mean, I would sit in lecture classes and really absorb, you know, content that people are saying. Mm-hmm. Working through problems, you know, on the board, working through them myself is kind of how I would, and I'd dive in and read what I needed to, but I always really struggled at getting through like a book.
Yep.
But in the recent couple of years, I've really kind of made more of a point to read. And I'm really starting to enjoy it. One thing I learned is that I cannot read novels. I just can't read fiction. I have no interest in it. It's either like business or strategy or philosophy, yep. Kind of that general. And if you can tie those things together where it's very philosophical, but has these business leanings, that's the stuff I jam on. Right now I'm rereading a book. One of the few books I read in college was Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
It's a good one.
My professor gave it to our capstone class my senior year of college, and I for whatever reason I decided to actually read the thing. Most books I would just kind of skim or, you know, not get through, and I really liked it, and it really kind of struck me in college because I was at that point in my college career, I was doing the you know, interviewing and learning about how to manage people, and I think that's just a really all-time book. I mean, I think it's one of the most successful books ever written, sold just millions and millions of copies, but I'm rereading it because I want to take some of my employees through the book. I was talking to a manager of mine several weeks ago, and she was trying to describe a problem she was having with a peer. And I said, well, can I read that email exchange? You know, she was describing this email, and I read the email exchange, and I don't like Dale Carnegie's book just popped in my head, and I'm like, man, she's not trying to do what she's doing here in this email. But I kind of had to point out some subtle language where you can really put people in the wrong mindset, mm-hmm. or put people on a defensive track very quickly with just simple word choices. And I said, you know, I'm going to buy you this book I read in college. I really liked it. And that turned into me buying about 5 or 10 copies. And now I'm going to try to walk through it with my staff. So I'm sort of like rereading it with that lens on that I want to talk about it with people. So it's kind of a more slow, deliberate read.
Sure.
But I have a whole pile here on my desk, though, I'm really excited about. but the next book I want to read is Principles by Ray Dalio. He's a huge hedge fund manager. And I've heard that's a really, really cool book.
Yeah, that's it. Now you're making me want to reread How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Right, isn't it? I mean, it's such a classic, like, simple book, but it's so important.
Great. So any final word or advice to offer listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
You know, I think just kind of echo what I said earlier. Be generous. Give the world more than you take from it. You know, and I think that is a successful life. I mean, there's no there's no path towards happiness that is not 100% centered around being generous, you know, with everything you have. Give your mind, your body, you know, your soul. You know, that's love, you know, another kind of definition, I think, is to kind of be generous. And that's really, that's it. And the network is just sort of that symptom of living a good life. So be generous, you know, try to give, you know, and only take what you need. And
really good advice.
You'll have a good network and you'll have a good life.
I like the statement, give the world more than what you take from it. I think that's really powerful. Mm-hmm. All right, Zach, if anyone is interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way that they can reach you?
Probably like direct messaging me on Facebook or something like that. I'm not super active on social media, but I am on all of them. So it's Zach Koga at on Facebook and on LinkedIn. My Twitter and Instagram is at Zach Koga, ZAKKOGA. Again, there's almost no content on those profiles, but I've thought about maybe doing more or saying more over time. But I'm there. I check those things semi-regularly. So, you know, if they see me somewhere there and reach out, I'll probably see it at some point. And if I'm slow to get back, sorry, but I will try. Right.
We'll include those links in the show notes then. Zach, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Zach for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.